From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma in San Francisco.
Elmwood.
El Sobrano.
Do you live in Richmond?
Yeah.
Albany Village.
Panoramic in Berkeley.
Berkeley, California.
Coming up, we'll find out how a powerful coalition is helping change San Francisco's laws to accommodate the sharing economy.
Sharing a home is literally the original cottage industry.
Then we'll hear how one group has orchestrated a classical flash mob.
We like places that are accessible where people walking by can stop and say, what's this, a whole orchestra? What's going on?
And the story of how one park fence is dividing a neighborhood.
It's a public space, and it sort of sends a message that people should keep out. I think that's what a lot of people feel.
Do fences make good neighbors? We'll find out today on Cross Currents. The sharing economy is all about adapting. Adapting your home, adapting your car, and now adapting the law. Leasing your bedroom, apartment, or house for less than 30 days has become a common practice in cities all around the world. But it's technically illegal in many major cities, including San Francisco. Now the city is trying to adapt its decades-old laws to accommodate this new growing practice. But as KALW's Charlotte Silver reports, this approach has left advocates on both sides of the debate wanting more.
To the right here is where we have all the bedrooms and bathrooms.
Emily Bankert is showing an apartment overlooking San Francisco's Noe Valley.
And out here is the open living area. Dining room, living room are combined, which makes it very spacious. And this place is all about the view.
But this isn't Bankert's apartment.
I own a company called Guest Hop, and we help manage people's short-term rentals.
She started Guest Hop last October after she had helped her friends manage their online listings.
I decided there's such a need for this. I was meeting more and more hosts that were like, what do I do while I'm traveling? How do I manage my guests and stuff? I'm like, there is a business there, and it's definitely meeting a niche crowd of people.
Her business grew from 5 listings to 50 in half a year. So she's one of the newer stakeholders in the economy of short-term rentals. There are plenty.
The owner of the building doesn't want a long-term tenant in here. Property owners have their hands tied behind their back when they have tenants. So a lot of property owners are getting out of long-term renting and moving over to the short-term rental market.
In San Francisco, that's not supposed to be an option. City laws prohibit most people from renting a housing unit for less than a month. And the city is now suing landlords for doing it. Supervisor David Chu calls this practice hotelization.
Hotelization.
And even though hotelization is illegal, he believes people should be able to rent out their homes from time to time.
I think many people in San Francisco, and my guess is everyone in San Francisco, has friends, neighbors, or themselves who have rented out apartments for the short term to help make ends meet.
So, last April, Chu introduced new legislation. It would require hosts to buy insurance, pay the hotel tax, and register their properties for a small fee. And they could not rent their spaces out for more than 90 days each year. Chu says it gives companies like Airbnb
clear standards of how they should behave and how they should advise their users to comply with our short-term rental laws.
A lot of people like it. The tenants union does, so do the planning and building inspections departments. And presumably, so do the nearly 10,000 San Francisco hosts who rent out space through Airbnb, VRBO, and FlipKey. But there are some who think any bending of the laws as they currently stand is just plain wrong.
He is not about regulating it. He's about legalizing it. My name is Calvin Welch.
Welch has been a housing rights activist for over 35 years. And actually, he helped pass some of the legislation that hosts are violating today in San Francisco.
It's a business.
Now Welch is defending those laws. He's preparing a measure to appear on the November ballot that would regulate those tourist rental companies almost completely out of San Francisco. Some tenants' rights groups and hotel workers are backing him. But Welch's opponents are also mobilizing their base. At the end of the workday, in a cafe in Hayes Valley, a group of Airbnb hosts have come together to discuss how to make what they're doing legal. Peter Kwan has been an Airbnb host since 2012. When he first started renting out a spare room, he didn't know whether it was legit or not.
I didn't. I had lots of questions about it, and I wasn't sure. So I started looking into it, and I tried to get some information from Airbnb, but there wasn't very much information available. So that's why I started Home Sharers.
Kwan founded Home Sharers of San Francisco in his living room, just a place for his friends and neighbors to discuss hosting. The group slowly grew through word of mouth. Then Airbnb heard about it. And now the little coffee klatch has around 900 members.
We've been working for a while in partnership with Airbnb to address this issue of supervisor choose legislation.
While Kwan's group is independent, Airbnb has helped them become a lobbying force. The company provides access to hosts' emails and sorts them by districts to make organizing meetups, like this one, easier. Tonight, there's a generous spread of snacks provided for the 30 or so attendees. Clipboards are distributed on different tables. Each has a spreadsheet identifying a different neighborhood, the Lower Haight, Pack Heights, Hayes Valley, with a list of all the local businesses. Next to each business is a space for hosts to sign up.
We're going to reach out to engage more and more home sharers with their neighborhood groups. We would like to eventually, as a group, go to our district supervisor and lay our case to him or her.
Then there's this guy.
I'm Sam Witherby. I'm the director of social entrepreneurship at Piers.
Piers represents 73 sharing economy companies. Though made up of mostly for-profit, multinational corporations and startups, Piers mobilizes a kind of grassroots activism, like online petitions, local meetups, and lobbying efforts. Piers has particularly strong ties to Airbnb. It got its initial funding from Airbnb, and its co-founder is a community manager at Airbnb.
First, let's take a moment to introduce ourselves. My name is Johnny, as I said.
After the introductions, they ask media to leave so they can talk strategy. But first, Peter Kwan shares a final thought.
Our society is now starting to recognize that a lot of people are starting to earn money from home. And I see home sharing as part of all that, right? That, in fact, sharing a home is literally the original cottage industry.
Kwan might be right that this is a cottage or home-based industry, but billions of dollars are riding on it becoming legal. Airbnb has the ability to attract both capital and grassroots investors like Peter Kwan and Emily Bankert. This will undoubtedly influence the future of the sharing economy. In San Francisco, I'm Charlotte Silver for Cross Currents.
Do you think Airbnb needs more regulation? How should the city regulate rentals? Tell us what you think by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106, and we'll try to put your response on the air. Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Although the sharing economy often deals with exchanging services, sometimes sharing is a way to simply lift the spirit and play. That's what's happening in the East Bay, where classical musicians, violinists and bass players, flautists and trumpeters gather to play orchestral music. But instead of a concert hall, they meet in warehouses or museums. No one's wearing a tie or a gown, and the group hasn't rehearsed. They play a few pieces together and then swill free beer between sets. This is the Awesome Orchestra. It's the brainchild of David Meschler, a freelance musical director for theater and opera companies. He wanted to find a way to make classical music fun and accessible. So last year, he started bringing musicians together for impromptu concerts open to the public. Admission is free, and players are volunteers, no audition required. On a rainy Saturday in March, KALW's Mary Reese dusted off her clarinet and dropped in to play along.
I'm standing in what looks like an oversized carport with rain pounding on the corrugated roof. A handful of people are moving furniture and setting up microphones and a mixing board. They're converting this airy art space into a concert hall.
When the band gets here, they're going to go around to the back.
Okay.
And they're going to load in that way because it's much drier and much safer.
That's David Meschler, conductor and founding artistic director of the Awesome Orchestra. His crew is unloading instruments, a timpani, bass drums, cymbals, snare drums, out of the back of a van. We're a block from Ashby Bart. The front doors and windows of this makeshift concert hall open directly onto the sidewalk.
We like places that are accessible where people walking by can stop and say, what's this, a whole orchestra? What's going on?
By noon, about 90 musicians sit in close half circles around Meschler, who's at the conductor's stand. The violins and violas sit closest, with the cellos and basses to the side. The woodwinds come next. The brass, trumpets, trombones, and tubas are up on the stage behind us. It's crowded. People pull out their instruments and start tuning strings, sucking on reeds, and playing scales. I open my case and put my clarinet together. I'm a little nervous. It's been a long time since I've played with a group.
Let's take a tuning note from one of the oboes back there for the winds in brass. Hopefully. The rain is in A, hopefully.
Meschler raises his baton and guides the warm-ups. He says his conducting style is less traditional than some conductors. Sometimes he'll even just start the group off and let them finish on their own.
Because I'm not their boss. I'm just kind of like an air traffic controller, like, over here, a little slower. Okay, stop. You know? So as opposed to somebody who's in charge of them.
We're working from sheet music, but we haven't rehearsed together. The piece we're about to play is the score for one of the Lord of the Rings movies.
In a fast three, first. Ready? And what?
Around 50 people, mostly in their 20s and 30s, pack the edges of the room. They're here just to listen.
Pretty good sight reading for an orchestra, right?
Performing movie scores and other contemporary classical music, as well as pieces by composers like Prokofiev and Mahler, is part of the Awesome Orchestra's mission. Meschler says the group seeks out musical adventures of all kinds.
Orchestras are a really amazing, powerful thing. And unfortunately, for many different reasons, over the last several hundred years, they've become fundamentally more and more inaccessible. And we need to give this to everyone. We need to give this opportunity to listen to stuff, or to play it, or just to be involved somehow up close.
Another way Meschler keeps the material fresh is by trying out new work by contemporary composers.
Next up, very, very exciting. We're going to do premiere reading of a new piece by a local composer named Jacob Bertrand called The Cloud Gatherer.
The Cloud Gatherer is based on a poem. Looking at the clarinet part, I think it looks pretty simple, but coming in at the right time with the right volume is key. I'm pretty excited to be part of the first ever ensemble to play this piece. Playing for 90 minutes, and my embouchure, my mouth and jaw, are really tired. It's time for a break. People get up to grab a beer, say hi to friends, and use the bathroom. Right now, since talking is easier for me than playing one more note, I set out to meet my fellow musicians. Lucy Giraldo plays violin and viola in a string quartet and in an indie folk band.
They're all very different. Yeah, I like putting my finger in different types of pies, musical pies. It's just such a fun, casual environment to come and play classical music with people. It's not high pressure. It's not stuffy. We're not in suits and ties.
Sitting a few rows away is Sally Johnson. She plays French horn in several different East Bay orchestras, but for her, the awesome orchestra stands out.
Well, number one, it's really good musicians. It's demanding to be able to come in here and sight read the music and learn it to the degree that it's passable to play it, to perform it.
For me, participation in the awesome orchestra really was awesome. It was exciting and stirring to play among 90 other musicians. It felt powerful to bring these symphonic pieces to breathing, pulsating life. And I did have fun, despite my aching jaw and ragged lower lip. In Berkeley, this is Mary Reese for Cross Currents.
For more information on the awesome orchestra, visit our website, kalw.org, and click on Cross Currents. Listening to Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Another place where locals are sharing common space is at our city's public parks. One popular spot is Huntington Park in San Francisco's Nob Hill. With breathtaking views of the city, it's a place where you'll often find couples lounging around on the grass and kids hanging from the monkey bars on the playground. It's a community institution and one that a neighborhood group is trying to improve. The Nob Hill Association has raised over $1 million to reconstruct a fence to go around the park. They say a good fence makes for a better park, but neighbors on the other side of the fence disagree. KALW's Liz Mack brings us that story.
If you happen to be in the Nob Hill neighborhood in San Francisco, then Huntington Park is a great place to relax, read a book, or bring your dog to Friday night's Yappy Hour.
80% of the people that I know in my neighborhood, I've met through this park and their dogs. I know more dogs than I know people's names, actually.
That's Horace Butt, watching his frisky dog run around the park. This neighborhood oasis sits high on top of a plot of land that used to house a mansion belonging to Arabella Huntington, once called the richest woman in America. That was back in the early 1900s. Her mansion had a fence around it, a massive iron fence. The house crumbled to the ground during the San Francisco earthquake in 1906, but part of the fence around the property survived, and for the past 100 years or so, was moved elsewhere. And it's this fence that's causing controversy. Some neighbors want to bring the fence back. They're part of a local neighborhood group called the Nob Hill Association, who say that restoring the original fence would bring back a part of San Francisco history. But it's an addition that not everyone actually wants. In the proposal, the association says a fence will help upgrade the park and keep it safer, too. It's nice to have good fences. They make good neighbors, right? Well, not in this case.
A public park is supposed to be inviting to people, and this is going to be uninviting. It's a public space, and it sort of sends a message that people should keep out.
That's Rishi Malhotra. He lives four blocks from the park.
I would say it's just all sort of tying in a trend of making it more exclusive and more catering towards upper middle class people who want things to be clean and neat.
Back in March, Malhotra started an online petition against the fence, asking for more public meetings about the issue. So far, it has well over 400 signatures. Malhotra's worried about the reconstruction of the fence. He says it would basically make a public space private. If it gets erected, the fence would measure 6 feet tall, and it would close the park from midnight to 5 a.m. He's heard the argument that the fence has historical relevance, but he doesn't think that's a good enough reason to bring it back.
There's people who have said that, you know, it's historic, like there used to be a park fence there, but there's never been a fence in the park in the last 100 years since it was made.
At the park, I asked some people what they thought about the plan.
I think, if anything, it caters to those who feel that it is going to serve a purpose, but it really won't.
It shouldn't limit the access to people. As far as I'm concerned, I think adding the fence would probably take away from what the park is now.
It just seems a little too late to recreate something that nobody remembers.
To make matters more complicated, the organization that's pushing for the fence has privately raised $1.4 million to reconstruct it and a playground. Their plan, if it goes through, is to give the fence to the city as a gift. But gifting over $1 million to the city won't be that easy, because Huntington Park
is publicly owned and operated.
That's Sarah Ballard, SF Recreation and Parks Director of Policy and Public Affairs.
It's the taxpayers' dollars that are spent to improve the park. It is the taxpayers' dollars that are spent on the staff and materials that maintain it.
Except in this scenario, the Nob Hill Association would be footing the bill for the fence. But Ballard says the system is structured to make sure everyone has an equal say.
Anything over, I believe, $100,000 needs to go through the public process of accepting the gift so that it's fully transparent to everyone exactly where the money is coming from and exactly what it will fund. That's exactly what the public process is for. That's exactly what our commission meetings are for.
According to SF Recreation and Parks, about a quarter of the 220 neighborhood parks in the city have gating or fencing around them. A park might be fenced to protect children's safety or to separate different areas of the parks, or for historical renovations. But Ballard says these fences don't make it any easier to maintain a park.
The existence or non-existence of a gate or a fence has very little to do with how we maintain a park. It gives you an additional feature to maintain, which is making sure that a fence is upright, is not graffitied, is well painted. But in terms of the day-to-day maintenance of lawns and play structures and all of those things, a park is a park is a park.
The Nob Hill Association says that the fence will be inclusive and safer for residents and their pets. But they declined to comment about their push for the restoration. The only people talking are the people who use the park, and none of those that I spoke to support the idea. Like Sam Plainfield, who I found sitting on one of the park benches. He says the fence would change the park, a place that's been a part of his life for over 7 years.
It would feel a little bit restricted, I suppose. I guess that depends whether they leave it open or not. But if what's the point of a fence if it's not going to close people off, right?
The controversy of using private funds to fence in Huntington Park will go through more public meetings. And eventually, the city has to agree to accept the donation as a gift. Until then, Huntington Park will remain unfenced. For Cross Currents, I'm Liz Mack.
You can find more stories covering Bay Area neighborhoods by visiting our website. We are KALW.org. That's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. Our team includes Isabel Angel, Jeremy Dalmas, Audrey Dilling, Sandia Dirks, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, happy birthday, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Suki Lewis, Ryan Miller, Stephen Short, Julia Scott, Liza Veal, and Melanie Young. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. Our line producer is Leela Day. Our senior producers are Julie Kane and Jen Chien. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And today it will be the last time that I say Martina Castro is our managing editor. We wish our multi-talented, uber-creative, and entirely beloved managing editor the best as she leaves on her adventure in Montevideo. Martina Castro, we wish you well, and you will be missed. Also, today marks the end of KALW's first ever Audio Academy, our 10-month training program to create the next wave of Bay Area radio makers. In fact, every piece in today's show was made by members of our Audio Academy. We thank each and every one of them, and we know we'll be hearing them soon. You're listening to the music of Tia Carroll. She'll be the guest vocalist with Grand Avenue Soul on Friday. They guarantee you will be entertained. Show up at San Francisco's Hotel Utah about 9 p.m. to see them make good on that promise. You can find more local music and more local stories at KALW.org. Just click on Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Said I hate, I got to tell you.